Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast for April 23rd, I think. Get the right day and the right month. So we're back. We recovered from the dinosaur episode and we were joined by our resident woodpecker.
Yeah, it's now
it's back
spring.
Spring has sprung.
He comes to the tree that's, I can see him. He's right there, see? He's right there on our tree, and I thought he was digging out a home for himself, but in fact, I'm told that he's...
He's just looking for bugs.
Right. But he can only do it right here.
Yeah, I think this is the place
in the morning.
In the town. Although it's not exactly early.
There are trees all around. I mean, you're looking everywhere. There's thousands of trees within eyeshot, and he chooses this
one. I think we sound bitter, but...
Yeah, yeah.
So today we thought we would talk about... Two things. One, I feel bad because I did not watch the funeral of Billy Graham, but for some reason I did watch the entire funeral of Barbara Bush, so I feel bad about that, and I probably should go back and watch the funeral of Billy Graham. But so we were going to talk about the funeral of Barbara Bush, and then we thought that we would have some commentary on GQ's 21 books you don't have to read. Because it's too good to pass up. So, you texted me late at night and said, you have to watch this funeral. And though I was almost asleep.
I thought it was a good funeral.
And dutifully woke up and watched it.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I mean, I thought, doesn't the church look like the National Cathedral? And it's
very
gorgeous.
Pretty church.
Yeah.
It's like, it was perfect liturgy done the way that it, you know. The perfect
yeah. This procession. Is why people. I mean, this is why people. Everyone should be Anglican. I think. I mean, just the
yeah. Never mind about the theology. The procession is so great.
Yeah, I mean, they did it perfect. The silent procession in a funeral.
Yeah, they had a hymn. Everybody should watch it. I'll try to link it. They had a hymn, but then it was silence, and they walked in and they did the anthems at the beginning of a.
The said and spoken anthems.
The spoken anthems, which are beautiful. They're from Job and John? It's just chunks of scripture read. The anthems are straight. Nobody added anything. They just took various pieces of scripture and put them together, right? At the beginning and the end, commendation. And then if you watch them go up the procession, they divided perfectly in front of the altar. And it was a perfect rhythm. They kind of came in waves. There was so much clergy. I don't know what they were all doing there because none of the clergy had anything to say except for the
I would have gone if I were in the...
Well, yeah. But there were two bishops who had nothing to do.
Yeah, one of them was Claude Payne, who was the one who stood in the way of me going to seminary. A real... piece of work.
That's not very nice.
He had reservations
about the level of your belief. Well, you were too intense.
He was a hireling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Having just preached
based on
that
the sermon yesterday.
Yesterday, he's one of those guys who makes friends with wolves and
attacks the sheep.
Yeah, exactly.
Or no, it doesn't attack, but scolds the sheep.
Scolds the sheep for being angry at wolves.
Mm-hmm. And for crying and stuff.
Yeah, right. Quiet. Yeah, he was an awful, 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 horrible bishop. And then the guy next to him is a heretic. The present bishop.
The present.
Texas.
Okay. I wondered what his.
Yeah, he's just a heretic. So.
He looks pinched, though, and.
No, I mean he's trying to be hip. Did you notice the thick, hipster glasses?
That's confusing because I thought he said Claude Payne is going to give the blessing, but then he didn't. And the other guy did.
I don't know.
Must have been smoking. The other really wonderful thing about it is that the dean of the cathedral who was kicking off the festivities had them sing Amazing Grace in the wrong place. Apparently Barbara Bush didn't even want Amazing Grace. And for some reason in the middle of the service he stood up and made everybody sing Amazing Grace and then he had to apologize as part of his sermon. I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah, no, so that's what, but this, again, is why everyone should be Anglican, whether there's, I, assuming one day that Anglicanism will be completely reformed and solid.
It's quite an assumption.
Right. But, you know, I really love the fact that you can go to a funeral like that and really mourn and not have to be not the emotional, sappy.
Did you watch Billy Graham's funeral?
No, I didn't. That's one of the things I didn't watch it because I didn't, I couldn't, I didn't, and I heard it was good. So I don't want to, I didn't want to see it.
There's no liturgy to hold it together.
Yeah, yeah. And so all you have then, if you don't have liturgy, is you have to fall back on feelings. And
what about the R.C. Sproul one? They had some liturgy.
Yeah, that was really good. That was a good funeral. Yeah,
they had like a choir and then they had.
It wasn't Anglican, but it was a good.
They had a liturgical structure for it.
Liturgy, right.
Okay, so the interesting things about the Barbara Bush funeral. First of all, there was an unfortunate poem.
There was an unfortunate poem.
And there was no gospel reading. There was a series of readings that were unconnected to each other.
Yeah.
There was probably a granddaughter read Ecclesiastes.
Yeah.
That was read really well. And then there was a song. The music was all sort of old-timey Christian.
Probably things that she likes. Yeah.
Like I Come to a Garden Alone.
Yeah.
Was sung with
just I bet she liked that. I bet Barbara Bush wanted that one. Yeah.
Full emotion. I mean, gorgeous soloist. But then all the granddaughters, not all of them, but many of them, read Proverbs 31 in sort of by verse. One granddaughter would stand up and read a section of it and then another. So that you had all of their different voices and their personalities reading from this.
Very politically incorrect passage.
I know, and they kept panning to Hillary Clinton and Melania Trump during the reading of Proverbs 31, and it felt a little bit judgmental, like the family was saying something about
Barbara Bush as compared to.
Yeah,
I don't think they were, but it.
Well, I think they might have been. I mean, it was a little bit defiant. Like, this is what a good woman. And then one of the more famous granddaughters, but the one about your husband will be in the gates with all of the dog's drinking water. He's very thirsty. Your husband will be in the gates, you know, and honored among all the men at the gates. And they pan to George. It was really moving. Yeah, yeah. It was really moving.
The look on his face had through the whole scene.
Yeah, it was
really devastating.
Yeah. No, that's terrible to have your
wife die
at that age. So, it was really, and I thought that was really interesting. It was an interesting and quiet cultural rebuke. It felt like, you know, this family was saying something about what they thought appropriate behavior and,
I don't know. I don't think they were attacked. I don't think they were purposely going. I think the scriptures just do that. You know, if you read a Bible passage, but I mean, I think they really thought that about their grandmother, she may have picked it. Maybe it was one of her favorite passages.
It was a good description of her life overall.
Right. But that Bible just does that. When you're reading a passage sometimes and publicly out loud, and you look around and you look at yourself and you realize, ooh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Uh oh.
I don't know. I just thought. Right. There was a certain level of defiance from the young women who came forward to read each verse, too. Like, they were bringing it, you know, and they believed it. Yeah. So, it was really moving. And then, the sermon was okay. So, all the anecdotes, I just want in a general sense, say that at my own funeral, if there are any eulogies, I'm going to come back from the dead and whack the people who are at my funeral. There were a lot of eulogies, which I guess you have to do. You have to do. But it does really minimize the proclamation of the gospel when you have a lot of people who are telling about what a great person you were.
Yeah. So I think the problem with eulogies is they can become... I mean, I thought there were some really good... The historians... John Meacham, I think his name was, really good. I thought he did a great job of honoring her and not being too, you know, the in our experience, not always, but in some funerals that we've done, when families get up to say things, it can quickly spin out of control.
Devolve.
You can have people get up there and say inappropriate things like, oh, I remember this guy just was drinking beer and you know, and hanging out with all these women. Remember that? Were you there at the funeral that we had this?
Yeah, but it wasn't...
Where it was a little bit inappropriate?
Yeah, I was there. And nobody remembered the sermon.
Right.
Because...
So we came close to saying, okay, none of that until after... this last funeral we had, we said, okay, no family members speak until after the service is over, and they can do it during the reception. But anyway, I thought the sermon was okay, too. I mean, he mentioned Jesus.
And he said that she was a Christian.
Yeah, he said that she was a Christian.
And that she was ready... to die, that he asked her, and mm-hmm. she said, I know Jesus, and I am ready to go be with him, and you know, I'm sad about leaving George, but I really want to do this.
Yeah.
And so the afterlife, the sense of the resurrection, I think was really strongly, he didn't say anything about how if you don't believe, what will happen to you at the resurrection, but he did really hone in on the resurrection from the dead part.
I just can't help but think that if you have a national audience, that you should say something about repentance and
so that was the other thing that I liked.
I mean, so the way he started to do it, because the way you do it in a funeral sermon is you don't say you're all sinners and going to hell, and mm-hmm. you start with, let me tell you about the faith that this person
had, and he did, right? Like, everybody talked about how she was a repentant person. She was a kind person who apologized to other people, you know, she said something terrible in a political campaign, and she called that person
to apologize.
And she wasn't it wasn't her way or the highway in the sense that, it was to some degree.
Right.
But she was he definitely used that.
Yeah.
That she was a person of humility.
Right.
And
yeah, he did. I mean, and he's a good, I mean, I know he's Orthodox. Russell Levinson is an Orthodox Episcopal priest, which is hard to do. But really, the diocese isn't going to mess with them, because St. Martin's is...
It's a really fancy...
It's a powerhouse. So pretty much Russell Levinson can do what he wants without the bishop.
So I wish he hadn't said, well... there might be some different ways to God, but the way that Barbara Bush went,
yeah, that was really bad. That was the worst part.
Yeah, if he hadn't said that.
Yeah.
And if he had said repent and believe, that would have been good too.
Yeah, I mean, so I guess we're saying it's okay because based on other Episcopalian sermons we've heard, this was like Augustine of Hippo rising to the pulpit.
When your expectations are low enough.
Right. This is how it reminded me of sermons in our seminary days. When someone didn't get in the pulpit and denied the basic
faith, you were excited and
happy. Yeah. Okay, I don't have to go home. And
this wasn't addled with heresy.
Right. I mean, there was. There might be other ways with heresy, but on the list of where the sermon could have gone, it was okay.
It was pretty good.
Yeah.
So.
But I think when we're talking about funerals, this was a good one to see. And I think if we're going to plan our own funerals, we can now know what we want, what we don't want.
Oh, well, I already know. I have notes. And if you sing Amazing Grace at my funeral, I will come back from the dead and haunt you. And if you try to do a eulogy in the service.
I want a Mighty Fortress for my funeral.
Okay.
And then that Calvin, the song by Calvin, him by Calvin.
Okay.
And then...
you need to write it down.
Okay.
I have a file on my device that says funeral directions, and it has the hymns, the readings, the colors of the flowers, and what everybody can eat for lunch afterwards.
And I want Alistair Beck to preach.
Okay, then.
I'm going to tell him right now. He can come.
He can. Better get on his calendar.
Hopefully. I imagine he'll probably be gone before I'm gone.
Well, you never know.
Yeah, that's true.
Tomorrow, you don't even know about tomorrow.
I'm working in the garden today, so maybe I'll die.
You'll die? The garden?
Alone.
Alone. when the dew is still on the
right.
roses.
Right.
Right, so, no, I recommend it as a funeral to watch. I'll link it.
Yeah.
Anything else?
No, I just thought it's... Okay. So we can move on to the...
I wouldn't say more important topic. No,
it's not more important.
But GQ did a... Do you want to call it an article? A farce called 21 Books You Don't Have to Read. And it's not even by one person. It's by the editors of GQ.
I thought it was one guy just like posting a one-off article that he, you know, didn't think very carefully about, and the editors let slip through it. In fact, it's by the editors.
So can I read the first paragraph?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it sets it up beautifully. We've been told all our lives that we can only call ourselves well-read once we've read the great books. We tried, and that should have been the end. But they go on. We got halfway through Infinite Jest and halfway through the Spark Notes of Finnegan's Wake. But a few pages...
Wait, are Spark Notes like...
That's not actually reading it.
Are Spark Notes like the things you used
Cliff
to buy?
Notes Cliff or whatever, okay. Yeah. But a few pages into Bleak House... Okay, I love Bleak House, you morons. That's a great book. We realize that not all the great books have aged well. Some are racist and some are sexist, but most are just really, really boring.
Oh my gosh.
So we and a group of unboring writers, give you permission to strike these books from the canon. Here's what you should read instead.
This is just asinine. I mean,
yeah.
It's asinine.
This is apocalyptically terrible.
Yeah, it really is like...
It's the end of humanity.
I mean, who goes to... When I'm reading a great book that I know is good, objectively, like... Yeah, something by Tolstoy. But I know, okay, this is good literature, but I find myself bored.
Yeah.
Stiff by
that's it. Not the that, book's
I don't think,
problem.
Well, that
that's
this
your
shouldn't
problem.
Be. Yeah, that's my problem. That's not the book's problem. And the idea that I'm going to go through and look at books from the past and not read them because of my perceptions of racism or sexism or... I'll be happy to read a Marxist book if it's good, if it's well written, and it really influenced a culture in a certain way. I don't care. I want if it's a good. This is ridiculous. This is absurd. I mean, I can't believe someone actually put this to print because it looks stupid.
Why?
It makes you look stupid.
Yeah, it does make them look stupid. It makes them look stupid. And as we go through, it's going to make them stupider and stupider.
So the first book on the list is Lonesome Dove by Larry McMurtry, which
That's
I love.
You shouldn't read this thing. You shouldn't bother to read this one.
Yeah, I love this book. And I've read it many times as a young guy growing up. And here's what they say. This is by Laura... Oh, actually, the editors, but I guess the little...
Oh, each one
each
has...
Each one has their own little person whacking it.
Oh, so a woman here,
right?
I assume, who's writing for GQ Magazine, mm-hmm. which seems terrible.
So I actually love Lonesome Dove, but I'm convinced that the cowboy mythos, with its rigid masculine emotional landscape... glorification of guns and destruction and misogynistic gender roles is a major factor in the degradation of America. Rather than perpetuate this myth, I'd love for everyone, but particularly American men, to read The Mountain Lion by Gene Stafford. It's a wicked, brilliant, dark book set largely on a ranch in Colorado, but it acts in many ways as a strong rebuttal to the old toxic Western stereotypes we all need to explode.
She sounds like a treat, doesn't she?
Man, her poor husband. Is he neutered? Does he have
a?
I doubt she does have a husband. Wow, this is odd. I mean, but seriously, this. So it's not a bad book. I mean, she even admits that the writing is not bad.
She likes it. She loves it. Even
yeah.
But Lonesome Dove is what's wrong with America, like the fact that we have Lonesome Dove perpetuating the stereotype of rigid, masculine, emotional. Glorification of guns and destruction is what's wrong with our society today.
So we're gonna produce a bunch of idiots who can't read good literature because they're triggered. That's what's going on.
Yeah.
This woman was triggered. And it's in Gentleman's Quarterly. Do these men have the masculine parts? Are they... Like, they don't have any maleness. Why would you let a woman even print this in your book if it's called Gentleman's Quarterly? No. Off from my pages, I would do. These men... And, who goes to Gentleman's Quarterly for a literary review of anything?
Yeah, well, there's that. But I went ahead and watched some videos of, because they do Lord of, little videos of famous men. But now, you know, in fancy outfits, because isn't this supposed to be like a male
fashion magazine? Okay, but okay, that's the first problem.
All the fashions now for the fancy men are flowered. They're covered in like upholstery looking flowery coats and
so
jewelry.
As not to glorify the misogynistic gender roles of the Western mythos.
Yeah. Should we carry on?
Or? Yeah, the Catcher in the Rye. Have you read Catcher in the Rye?
Yeah. I actually didn't hate it. I read it. I don't think we should hit every single one of this. It will take us forever.
I just want to read this one line. I read it because everyone else in school was reading it, but I thought it was totally silly. Now looking back, I find that it is without any literary merit whatsoever.
Instead, I suggest Olivia, a story of a British teenager girl who was sent to a boarding school in France. Oh, that sounds like a
That's
treat.
That's great. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Let's go. Let's we focus on the ones we've read. How about Old Man and the Sea by Ernest Hemingway?
Yeah, what a dumb book. That's another one I've read. I read that this one as well, and I didn't hate this either. It wasn't my favorite book. Of course, I prefer Jane Austen.
I love Hemingway personally. It's my favorite writers. Yeah.
Well, he's got
and he's not a he's not a Christian. He, I can be triggered sometimes by some things that that Hemingway writes because he's an existentialist with a really
bad drinking problem.
Yeah, yeah. So,
anyway. So you shouldn't read him,
right?
Just like you shouldn't read Shakespeare because you know that Shakespeare wasn't a Christian.
Did someone actually say that to you?
So Shakespeare.
Did a homeschooler say it to you?
Yeah.
This is one of the reasons why I think homeschoolers.
Bad rap.
Yeah. So don't read Shakespeare because he wasn't a Christian.
But also don't read him on the other side because he was misogynist and he's boring. Like, are there any Shakespeare books on here? I can't imagine what GQ would say about Shakespeare.
Right.
They should have gone full bore, but they were probably too afraid.
You know, it's not just the left that does this. You're right.
Both sides.
I had a person say that we shouldn't read C.S. Lewis because... You know, he was
a
universalist.
He doesn't have perfect theology.
Right.
Yeah.
So don't read anything that he writes because he has his...
You might be poisoned.
Yeah.
You don't...
So, I mean, we're left with reading...
Janet Oakey.
The Christian novelist. We're left with reading... Watching VeggieTales, maybe, depending on how...
Has it been corrupted?
Yeah, I guess it's been corrupted.
I don't know.
Maybe the King James Version of the Bible...
Well, that's off the list.
Well, I know from the from the Christian side. So anyway, this my father loved Old Man and the Sea, so I tried to love it. It left me unmoved. Mostly, I kept hoping the fish would get away without too much damage. Oh,
you are not a man, Jeff Vandermeer from Annihilation.
When my grandpa pushed me to catch a trout at a fish farm, I threw the rod into the pond.
Oh my word.
These people don't have.
Yeah, don't say it.
I won't.
But yes, I know what you're trying to say, and I agree with you.
I'd rather read Tove Jansson's The Summer Book. This series of vignettes about a grandmother and a granddaughter living on a remote Finnish island is not just heartwarming. In its view of both nature and human nature, it teaches us what it is to be in sync with the world around us. I mean, this is The Old Man of the Sea is a classic.
It's
good.
It's brilliantly written.
Novel.
Yeah.
But because the fish die, you don't.
He eats the fish. And then he pees off the side of the boat. Like,
yeah, that's very crude.
The ultimate.
You know?
I mean, it wasn't my favorite. I prefer to read Jane Austen, but it was brilliant.
Yeah.
Okay.
So another one, the number six is Farewell to Arms by Ernest Hemingway. Another brilliant book. Have you read that one?
No. I mean, I love reading about war and I love suspense, so I rushed right to it.
Hemingway's novels with their masculine bluster and... it's a problem. If it's too masculine, it's no merit.
Nothing for you.
Sometimes feel almost parodic to me. If you want to read about the intersection of love and war, Hemingway's subjects
in Farewell to Arms.
Consider Shirley Hazard's The Great Fire, about the fallout of the Second World War.
So they're taking books by men off the list and replacing them with books by women.
Yeah. I mean, I'm hoping that GQ is getting some pushback from this because about this. This is really, it's idiotic. It's if anyone who's writing these things has a job in a university or.
Okay, I want to go on to The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn.
Okay.
Okay, so again, like if you read Mark Twain and you think that he's a racist,
you're an idiot.
Like
he's using terms that people use.
Oh my word! Get a life and learn how to read a book, you moron. But they don't think we should read this. We should read the narrative of the life of Frederick Douglass, an American slave. Okay,
which is fine.
Yes,
read both.
Yeah, you don't need to pick, you moron. Why don't you read more books? Really, you're going to read 20 books, and you're going to exclude, you're going to pit one good book against another, you idiot.
So, I love that. So, this is a person commenting negatively on the literary ability of
Mark Twain.
The worst crime committed by Adventures of Huckleberry Finn is that it makes first-time Twain readers think Twain wrote tedious, meandering stories.
No.
He did, as is evidenced by this, his book of tedious meandering stories.
What a moron. You idiot. You idiot. You should feel
these people
so
should not be allowed
ashamed.
To read.
Yeah, you ought not be allowed to read. Who taught you to read? Here, Barbara Bush's whole life was like focused on literacy. And this, at the time of her death, this is what we have. You idiot. Okay.
But then Frederick Douglass makes observations like, I love the pure, peaceable, and impartial Christianity of Christ. I therefore hate the corrupt, slaveholding, women-whipping, cradle-plundering, partial and hypocritical Christianity of this land. And then this kind of sarcastic little, you were saying, Mr. Twain?
Yeah, Mr. Twain hated Christianity that was hypocritical. Yeah, if you read these two books, you would see that Mark Twain is not a Christian and he hates hypocritical Christianity. These two people are essentially saying the same thing, except one's a Christian, one isn't. You moron.
So, but moron. Look, he picks out one phrase from The Adventure of Huck Finn to kind of contrast that with Frederick Douglass.
Yeah.
While Jim, the affable slave friend of Huck Finn, exclaims things like, Lawsy, I is mighty, mighty glad.
Yeah. You idiot.
As if that's Mark Twain saying how, what?
Yeah.
This leaves the impression that the book is about how slaves are mighty glad to be slaves.
Oh, no, here it is.
Yeah.
It says it. Mark Twain was a racist. No, he wasn't.
Where is this?
That's under go down. No, he wasn't. Goodness. Nope. You misread the book. You are an idiot. Stop it. Stop. Okay. They don't like Henry James. Oh, man. I love Henry James. I haven't read this. I haven't read The Ambassadors by Henry James, but I love Henry James.
Well, and Rise and Fall of the Third Reich by William Shire. I've read that. That's when they suggest in place of it.
Yeah, but you know what? You don't need to pick. Why don't you read some Henry James? Are you a writer like Henry James?
Okay,
now we come to the pinnacle.
The Bible.
Okay, read the whole paragraph.
Okay, I'll just read it without comment.
All right, let's just read it straight.
The Holy Bible is rated very highly by all the people who supposedly live by it, but who in actuality have not read it. Those who have read it know there are some good parts, but overall it is certainly not the finest thing man has ever produced. And it is repetitive, self-contradictory, sententious, foolish, and even at times ill-intentioned. If the thing you heard was good about the Bible was the nasty bits, then I propose Agota Christoph's The Notebook. A marvelous tale of two brothers who have to get along when things get rough. The subtlety and cruelty of this story is like that famous sword stroke from below the boat that plunged upward through the bowels, the lungs, and the throat, and into the brain of the rower. Someone has plunged a sword stroke through the brain of the right. This is absurd. Okay, so the Bible is bad because everyone who's read it knows there are some good parts, but overall, it's certainly not the finest thing that man has ever produced. It's repetitive. So, okay, I've read the thing 20 times now. And no, I don't know that overall it's competitive are repetitive and self-contradictory and sententious. It's not. That's absolutely ridiculous. And I doubt this person's actually read the Bible.
Oh, I'm sure that this person hasn't read the Bible.
Right.
There is no way that anybody on this list has read the Bible. And I would wonder, I would like to question whether...
Or read
whether,
the books they've actually, they're panning.
Yeah, no. Did this person also read The Notebook? I bet they also didn't read The Notebook. Because who has read The Notebook? Who puts The Notebook and the Bible in a category together? Again, I know I'm losing the capacity of language. I keep using the same word over and over again, but that's moronic. It's beyond stupidity. Like this, well, I read that the Bushes used to say to each other, some village has lost its idiot.
Well, they've all congealed and come together.
Gathered the idiots of our time and put them on the internet so that we can open our mouths in amazement and horror. Yeah, if you don't think that we're coming to the end of humanity, you're so wrong.
So the next one is we're just skipping around, but then the Lord of the Rings by J.R.R. Tolkien.
Yeah.
Did you read this one?
I have read big sections.
Did you read this?
Oh yeah, no,
paragraph.
I read it. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So I've every year
read it.
I read.
Yeah, you read the
Lord of the Rings. So
okay, this person says, this person is Manuel Gonzalez. I liked The Hobbit a lot. Oh, well, good for you then. But while Tolkien's Lord of the Rings books are influential and exercises in world building, as novels they are barely readable. Okay, then. Okay. And despite the fact that millions of people read it.
Children.
Our children have... Yeah. Our
children.
Mere children, who are not the brightest boxes in the matches in the box, have read The Lord of the Rings over and over again and adore them. Okay. They are barely readable. It never seemed to me that Tolkien cared about his story as much as he cared about rendering in minute detail the world he built. Yeah, you know, why? Wonder what other things seem to you. Why don't you stop? Anyway, why not instead read Ursula Le Guin's magnificent and beautifully rendered stories and novels surrounding Earthsea? Le Guin captures the world of Earthsea through a powerful, dark, gorgeous kind of storytelling that is irresistible. Perhaps Le Guin's work, along with the entire universe of fantasy fiction, wouldn't have been possible without Tolkien's influence behind it. But in its time, Le Guin's books are more influenced and make for better reading. Okay.
Wait, in its time, Really? This person's books are more influential.
Ursula Le Guin is a brilliant writer, and the Earthsea series, which I haven't read, but I have friends who adore them, and get this, also love Tolkien. Oh my word, can you read two books, or are you so thick-headed that you can only read one book and you have to malign and it show your amazing ignorance in rejection of a second book?
I actually love this part that are influential as the Lord of the Rings books are influential as exercises in world building. As novels, they are barely readable. It never seemed to me that Tolkien cared about his story as much as he cared about rendering in minute detail the world he built. It's called imagination and creativity. I mean, he really constructs a world. That's a good
thing. Yeah, and then he also has a story in that world.
And it's not
Those
that difficult
two
to follow the
are
story.
Not in competition with each other. They exist harmoniously together in the book.
There and back again. There and back again. It's not a difficult plot line. It's not hard to follow. It's a classic plot line that goes through most novels.
Many
fantasy novels. Many books, including, you know, the Bible has this.
Well, that is the book that is most unreadable. Okay, have you read the next few? Because I would go to Gulliver's Travels.
Let's go to Gulliver's Travels. I don't know.
Okay, so they think that you shouldn't bother with Gulliver's Travels, and instead you should read The Life and Opinions of Tristram Shandy, gentlemen. And I'm just going to say it again, because I don't know what else to say. Why don't you read both books, you idiot? Both of these books are good. Both are interesting and fantastic, and but if you refuse to read Gulliver's Travels, you're an ignorant buffoon who is uneducated, and you should not have the ability to write on the internet. Both books are good. You should read both of them.
Okay. Swift's dreary satire is routinely inflicted on high school English classes. Why Swift's dreary satire is routinely inflicted on high school English classes is a mystery to me.
Like the mystery of God, the mystery of being a person who can read books. There's so many things that are lost to a civilization, reading books. Yeah. So the executive editor of GQ wrote that one. Oh, he says, it's also deeply weird. Postmodern 200 years before postmodernism, with a deeply unreliable narrator, typographic trickery, and a list of names that would make Pyshawn jealous. Yeah, that's what's so fascinating about it. Jonathan Swift was seeing into the future and was writing an incredible commentary about the way that the world was headed. Like, how can you... It's a brilliant book. Just read it, you idiot. Yeah, and so it's depressing.
I thought we'd have more to say looking through these things, but... I thought we'd have more... creative things to say about
other than you guys are
then the dumbest, collapsing and
dumbest people on the internet.
Right. I mean, this is really beyond.
Okay, but it's in a cosmic sense. This is the dark ages that people like the Benedict Option guy, Rod Dreher.
Right. Oh, yeah. This is it.
It's insane.
Yeah.
Like he warned, you know, 15 years ago, we're headed into a dark ages. I read an article that really helped, you know, a long time ago. Like you have to educate your children, because we're going into a dark time, where nobody will know how to read, and people will just be like, you know, spooning up
barbarians pieces. Bumping into an aqueduct and thinking, yeah, what's this for? Like, this is stupid.
Hauling along their carts of mud, right, and stirring them around and eating, you know, garbage and just idiot. And so when you have that going on in the world around you and war, and you have to hunker down and you have to impart knowledge to a few people who will carry the torch. That's what you have to do with your children. You have to educate them.
Yeah. So
teach them to read. And right, by that, you both have to teach them how the letters go together. And then this is the really hard part. You have to show them how to read, so that when they read Mark Twain, they get that he's not racist. That's a level of ignorance and blindness that's just terrifying.
It's again we're going back to this it's on the left and the right, and I think what it is, it's fundamentalism, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, this is fundamentalism. You can do it from the right, where you don't read anything but the King James Version and
Janet Oakey.
Janet Oakey, right.
Yeah,
right,
I mean,
right.
Like, if that's
who Janet Oakey is, the Christian romance novelist, is that right?
Yeah. Look, I'm sorry, but I read a bunch of those books. I read When Calls the Heart. Just lay off me. But I prefer Grace Livingston Hill. She takes it to the next level. If you're looking for a dark secret pleasure, what you do is you get a pile of Grace Livingston Hill novels and you stay up all night blowing through them one by one by one. And then you're really
tired.
Would
you recommend reading Grace Livingston Hill instead of...
Oh, yeah.
Maybe...
instead of this person?
Romeo and Juliet or...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Don't read Romeo and Juliet. Read Crimson Roses. Because the Crimson Roses is Christian. And all the people are Christian.
Right.
And it's not idolatrous. That makes it good literature.
Remember that person?
Because they're Christian.
Who told us that we should not read Narnia or or Tolkien because it has magic.
Yeah, it's magic.
Right. So from, and they wouldn't let their kids read those books because
Harry Potter.
Because there's magic.
There's badness.
Right. Now, like, I'm not a big Harry Potter fan.
Because they're not well written. Okay, wait a minute. If you have to choose between Harry Potter and The Lord of the Rings, I think that's a clear choice. Right. Also, why can't you pick books that, like, go next to each other? What makes you think that putting the Bible up against the notebook is, like, a thing? What?
Right, I mean, I can see a Muslim saying, you know what, don't read the Bible, read the Quran. Right.
Or, I don't know, the Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah.
Or read the life of Buddha. There's some beautiful books about the life of Buddha.
This person hasn't read any of those books.
I know. No, they can't read those books. I'm not going to read that book about, like, it's got words. It's really long. It's a long
this
book.
This author spends too much time creating a world out of nothing and then describing it in rich detail and making languages up out of thin air and complete with grammars, and that's just boring.
That's boring. What an idiot.
Yeah.
It
is kind of the same thing you see in churches, though, too, when people come in to a really well-done liturgy with good hymns.
Yeah. Oh,
where's
Oceans?
The band?
Where's the Oceans? Where's the band? Where's the Raving Love one or whatever? What's the one everybody's making fun of right now?
The Raving Loved one.
No, the...
Raving Loved
one. The God's love is reckless.
Reckless love.
Reckless love. Reckless love. Reckless. I need the... I can't... This hymn has a lot of words in it. So many words. I don't understand what they all mean.
Right.
This doesn't make me feel good.
Where's the bass? by bass guitar.
Devastatingly
drums?
Terrible.
Yeah.
I think that I'm going to make up a list of great books that I think people should read. Like, okay, so I agree. I don't like reading... I have a hard time reading books that everybody has read. I do... When I get up to a list of books and everybody's... Or your book comes out and everybody says, oh, you've got to read this. It's an amazing book. My first desire is to recoil and say, well, I don't want to read that. So I didn't read The Benedict Option because everybody... And
read
I read two other books that were of the same genre and were less well known because I should read The Benedict Option, though. I probably will. So I haven't read Harry Potter because I'm not excited about them. And I haven't read some of the lists, like on the lists of 100 books that you absolutely have to read. There are a lot of books on it, but I've read other books like that were less well known. One that I've been reading for a decade is A Piece to End All Peace. That's a really good history book. And The Adventures of Ibn Battuta. Like, that's not as well known. And I like Henry James a lot. And I mean, I'm working through First Footsteps in East Africa. A lot of these books are really hard to read because they have a lot of words. But they're fantastic. They're fantastic books.
Yeah. And
what kind of idiot are you if you can't read old books? Old books? Like, can you read a book that was written 200 years ago? Or are you too dumb to do it?
Yeah. This is, I mean, again, it's the, I think it's a, maybe it's the Anglican mindset that recoils against this kind of thing. Right?
Well, I mean, I think it shows our...
Probably the Catholic mindset,
our
the
level,
Lutheran mindset, too.
Yeah, there's a kind of a Christianity that's intellectual, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's probably an atheism. There's other religions that are also sort of intellectual, right? You can be an atheist and be a thoughtful, interesting person.
Right, you told me about your professor in Cornell who
taught
the King James
Bible. We read the King James Bible in one semester. It was remedial Bible for English majors because there were a bunch of, you know, second semester seniors or English students who were trying to read Milton, Shakespeare, and couldn't work their way out of the paper bag because they didn't know the Bible. And so they offered, it's not there anymore, I looked.
Yeah.
They offered a course on the Bible. You had to read the whole thing in one semester. And this professor loved this book because it's a good book. It's a good book. And he drew out major themes. You could read it in a literary way if you were a person with a mind. It was brilliant. And actually, his course on the Bible was far more interesting than the vast majority of Bible courses that we took in, that I took in seminary, where the seminary professors in the Episcopal Church were wandering around much like the editors of GQ.
What does this mean? Like,
I don't know what this is about. I mean, it just seems really hateful to me. So, I mean, we're going to read it for a semester, but good luck to you, you know. No, like, if a book has lasted that long, even the Bible, it's there's something about it that you, in the smallness of your person, should try to conform to and understand. So it's anti-intellectual.
Yeah.
It's bad.
It makes you less of a person.
Yes. And if there's, like, and that kind, the Christianity small, that does
small
that.
Small people, right.
Yeah. That, and then the liberalism that does that, they should repent.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they should read some books.
Yeah. The Notebook in particular.
Don't know. We'll start with Lonesome Dove.
Right.
If you can't read the Bible,
read Lonesome Dove.
Just read Lonesome Dove.
Well,
I mean, I feel that I've said all the things I want to say.
Yeah. I think we're done.
So we'll definitely be back next week, probably.
Probably.
Until then, read something.
And go to church.